उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर भवति नैष्ठिकी। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 50 एंटाइटल कृष्णा एस्टैब्लिशेस द्वारका टेक्स्ट नंबर 19। श्री भगवान वाचा ना वै सुशूरा विखटन्ते दर्शयन्ति एवा पौरुषं नागृणीमो वचो राजन् आतुरस्य मुमूर्षुशतः। श्री भगवानुवाच न वै सूरविखटन्ते दर्शयन्ति एव पौरुषम् नागृणीमो वचो राजन् आतुरस्य मुमूर्षतः। श्रीभगवानुवाच न वै शूरविकथन्ते दर्शयन्ति एव पौरुषम् नागृणीमो वचो राजान् आतुरस्य मुमूर्षतः। श्रीभगवानुवाच न वै शूरविकथन्ते दर्शयन्ति एव पौरुषम् नागृणीमो वचो राजन् आतुरस्य मुमूर्षतः। भगवान् उवाच राविकथन्ते एव पौरुषम् ऋणीमो वचो राजन् आतुरस्य मुमूर्षतः। श्रीभगवानुवाच वैशूराविकथन्ते दर्शयन्ति एव पौरुषम् नागृणीमो वचो राजन् आतुरस्य विमूर्षतः। श्रीभगवानुवाच न वै शूरा विकथन्ते पौरुषम् माताजी। श्री भगवान वाच न वै शूरा विकथन्ते दर्शयन्ति एव पौरुषम् नैर्विणीमो वचो राजन् श्रीभगवानुवाच द सुप्रीम लॉर्ड सेड ना डू नॉट वै इंडीड शूरा हीरोज विकथन्ते बोस्ट वेनली दर्शयन्ति देशो एवा सिंपली पौरुषाम् देयर प्रोवेस नागृणीमः वी डू नॉट एक्सेप्ट वचः द वर्ड्स राजन् ओ किंग आतुरस्य ऑफ वन हु इज मेंटली एजिटेटेड Mumurshataha, who is about to die. Translation: the Supreme Lord said, real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and who wants to die. Shri Shuka Uvacha Jarasutastav Abhishta Madhavau Mahabalau Ghena Baliya Vashranod Shashainayana Dvajava Jirasarthi Surya Nalau Vayur Iva Bhradenubhi. Translation purported by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation: Shukdev Goswami said, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched toward the two descendants of Madhu and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and their soldiers, chariots, flags, horses and charioteers. Purport: Acharya Sridhar points out that the clouds only seem to cover the sun. The sun remains shining in the vast sky. Nor is the potency of fire affected by the thin covering of dust. Similarly, the covering of Jarasandha's military strength was only apparent. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Datati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Dam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakham Vitamscha Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavade Paschata Deshitarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratishe Namaha Panchatattvad Matam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namasute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So there is one more verse to cover up. Read the translation purport for 21 too. So, the Supreme Lord said, real heroes do not simply boast, but rather show their prowess in action. We cannot take seriously the words of one who is full of anxiety and wants to die. Shukdev Goswami said, just as the wind covers the sun with clouds or a fire with dust, the son of Jara marched the two descendants of Madhu, and with his huge assemblage of armies surrounded them and the soldiers, chariots, flags, horses and charioteers. The text number 21, the women stood in watchtowers, palaces and the high gates of the city when they could no longer see Krishna's and Balaram's chariots identified by banners marked with the emblems of Garuda and a palm tree. They were struck with grief and fainted. Purport: the women are especially mentioned here because of their extraordinary attachment to Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram. So this is the ongoing discussion of Shukdev Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj, who probably is nearing his last few hours in this mortal body. And imagine one would like to conclude one's last phase of life with Vrindavan Leela. Like, everyone thinks that, I mean, the whole goal of life is to spend the last few hours at least in Sri Vrindavan Dham, leaving the body. Parikshit Maharaj is hearing Dwarka Leela towards the end of his life. Right? Shukdev Goswami is not saying, I will again come back to Vrindavan Leela after some time. Something extraordinary in the sense that Krishna is in his extraordinary sweetness. As Prabhupada said, Gulab Jamun, you don't have to taste the rear or the end or the inside to experience the sweetness. The whole Gulab Jamun is full of sweet nectar. Any bite, anywhere, would get you the same experience, provided it is cooked to the perfection. Otherwise, everywhere you will get some different experience. But therefore, Krishna is a perfect person. He is the absolute truth. To taste Krishna in any of his personality, any of his qualities, is a privilege, is an honor for the conditioned soul. And that gratitude, when received by the devotee, also experiences that sweetness in perfection. The receptivity of the devotee has to be perfect in order to taste the perfect Krishna. And therefore, the more we become pure, the more we become perfect. The goal is not to become perfect by purity, but the goal is to actually experience Krishna in his perfection. Because as soon as Prabhupada would say that as soon as you understand Krishna, all the other anomalies and all the other anxieties of life, they just vanish. All the other dualities of existence, they disappear into oblivion. And therefore, this wonderful narration of how Krishna is encountering Jarasandha is something that we all can gain a lot of insight and experience from how Krishna does things, how Krishna deals with situations. Because this material world is going to be a place of situations all the time and all adverse. Rameshwar Prabhu was asking Srila Prabhupada, why is that everything going very smoothly and suddenly there are disturbances? And suddenly there are so many disturbances and then Krishna's mission cannot go forward. And he was complaining to Srila Prabhupada about how there are so many difficulties in the good work that we do. And everyone experiences in this world that the more the good quality of work, the more there will be obstacle. The more the heinous quality or the degraded quality of action, there will be more support and there will be more acknowledgement in this world. Then Prabhupada replied, actually this whole world is always in chaos and distress. By Krishna's grace, sometime it is smooth. That means when it is smooth, we should understand that is Krishna's grace, that it is sometimes smooth. Otherwise, this whole world is full of chaos and distress. So, we are placing the right expectation in the wrong circumstances, in the wrong environment, in the inappropriate environment. So here, Krishna would have stayed in Vrindavan, but the atmosphere was actually full of chaos outside Vrindavan. And therefore, when Krishna immediately left Vrindavan, he had to deal with the chaos and the distress. And the distress and the chaos were created by certain people who actually were the source of that disturbance. So, this is how we see how Krishna faces and deals with situations. First, he recognizes the challenge. First, he recognizes the threats and voids in life. threats may be external and internal. Also the voids could be internal and external. Threats, especially due to Jarasan, that we'll discuss. And Jarasan was the complete representation of revenge and exploitation. This was a threat which Krishna had to encounter. And thereafter, recognizing a challenge is just identifying a problem. And a mere identification and acknowledgement of a problem is not a solution. And therefore, immediately there has to be a step of courage. That it is no one but me now who has to take the solution forward. So that courage is the next step which Krishna takes to deal with Jarasan. And courage requires a great amount of insight and strategy. Krishna knows the threat very nicely and therefore is able to deal with it, deal with the threat with an appropriate strategy. Every threat is a challenge, and every challenge has a solution, but the solution comes with a strategy and insight. And therefore the third step is then developing competence along with the courage to enforce that solution to completion. So the first step is recognize the challenge. Next step is to strategize with courage. And third step is to compete or competence to completion. So that means Krishna dealt with the whole situation in these three ways that we'll discuss today. And therefore we'll see how in the life of a devotee also these challenges will come. The place of courage has to be in place, and the courage has to be developed with lot of competence. So as we'd explained, Jarasan being a very vengeful and a very atrocious king, he wanted to be the emperor of the whole Bharatvarsha of that time, and therefore he actually gave his daughters to Kamsa, knowing that they were of a similar nature, exploitative nature. Two exploitative people actually get well very together. But two selfless people sometimes don't get well together. And that's the difficulty of this world, that the whole world is united with exploitative people coming together in a very great level of cooperation. Otherwise this systematic way of exploitation would not have been gone so smoothly. All exploitative people are very united, unfortunately. And all selfless people who have a good intention are fragmented and disunited. And therefore the world needs to bring all the selfless forces together to fight the united cooperative stance of the exploitative class. And therefore Krishna and Balaram are representing that goodness coming together to combinedly fight. And therefore Krishna calls Balaram, I need your assistance to fight Jarasan. And therefore this is very important, that there are many points of unity within the association of devotees, and there are many forces of dissension that the united front of devotees have to deal with and fight with. And therefore cooperation and unity amongst devotees is absolutely must to fight the forces which are fragmenting the fabric of dharma, or tearing apart the fabric of dharma. So here revenge and exploitation. Revenge is like Surpanakha represented at revenge. As soon as she was insulted, she bore within her mind that very revengeful attitude, and therefore she went and incited Ravan. But she incited Ravan's exploitative mindset to the fullest. So wherever there is revenge, exploitation will follow. Because there is a great tendency to push oneself ahead of someone. And when we find an encounter or an obstacle to one's path or progress, one wants to exploit the situations or the person to actually go forward. Revenge is nothing but to be number one. And therefore we have find where we call this revenge and expectation in this world as competition. Very sophisticated way of saying it, that we are competing with each other. There are various games that people are playing, sports. What is this? Nothing but revenge and exploitation. So actually when we see all the sports and hear all the sports, is nothing but one party wanting to take revenge over the another or to exploit the other party. And therefore this tendency is all pervasive in this material existence, revenge and exploitation. Therefore Krishna is, so how Srila Prabhupada is explaining in some of his purports as going to them, and Prabhupada was saying in some of his purports that how to deal with this tendency of exploitation. Krishna dealt with this exploitation or the challenge by recognizing Jarasandha's potential and to convert that potential into convert the potential of the army to one's advantage. So that challenge was seen. So in this sense, exploitation, Prabhupada is explaining how to check exploitation, and obviously Prabhupada is talking about revenge also in many purports, especially in the purports where there is Jay and Vijay who are cursed by the four Kumaras. So when Jay and Vijay are cursed, they are very nice, two devotees. This is the clash between two devotees, four Kumaras and the two doorkeepers. It's a altercation of a temporary nature. And here it is explained that as soon as they were offended, the four Kumaras, they cursed Jay and Vijay. And since they were cursed, the Lord actually came out and he defended them, and he spoke very well of the four Kumaras also, and spoke well of his doorkeepers also. He did not side with anyone. That doesn't mean he was neutral. He glorified both of them. I mean, he adjusted both of them by saying that the Brahmana's harsh words are not to be taken very seriously, and they should be dealt with a very mild and receptive glance. That how should a Brahmana's harsh speech or a conduct should be dealt with. And since it is my servants who did a mistake, it is my fault. So Jay Vijay, it was not Jay Vijay's fault, it was my fault. So none of them should harbor any ill feelings for each other. That's how the Lord settled the situation. And thereafter, another similar condition is of Narad Muni cursing Nalakuvar and Manigriva. And sometimes it seems that the harsh words and the curses of the great sages are seem to be very sometimes seem to be very full of injustice. But actually Narad Muni's purpose of delivering Nalakuvar and Manigriva through these curses was a great benediction, which was realized later. So therefore the revenge or the tendency to revenge has to be seen in a perspective of a temporary situation, altercation, and a future possibility. And therefore, I think so there was a nice story that just came across, that in a restaurant there was a lady who was sitting on a table and something was served to her, and suddenly a cockroach came upon her, a flying cockroach. Cockroaches fly and come, they don't crawl. So they just came on her dish, and as soon as she saw the cockroach, she yelled, she cried, and she just threw away all these cups and dishes and across the table, and the huge bang and commotion. And as soon as she cried and she responded in such a way, everyone started crying and responding in a similar way. And none knew why this was happening. But everyone was responding because there was something really serious. If someone was doing this kind of crying and yelling, there must have been something very serious happening. So everyone was like disturbed, and suddenly a waiter came to know what happened. So he went, he tracked a cockroach, he caught him with a cloth and threw it away. And everyone just calmed. Oh, the cockroach is gone. This was a tiny cockroach. A situation was there. It was a situation, but it was not worth reacting. So the moral of the story was that there are situations where we react, but actually requires response. So the more we understand the difference between reaction and the response, the tendency for revenge and exploitation will not be there, because when we see the response has to be there in a way that the solution has to be addressed, not the problem. Most of the time the problem is addressed and the harping is there only on the nature of the problem. But the nature of the solution is never addressed. So therefore, it comes about to resolution. But actually response is something which is trying to deal with the problem in a way that a solution is addressed. The problem is addressed with the solution. So therefore, this is a very nice understanding, and he said Prabhupada explaining that how can this be done in an internal way. The first step is awakening. As soon as one awakens to a spiritual sense of a human being by the practice of spiritual regulations, then by spiritual regulations one will actually develop a sense of a spiritual sense of awakening. And when there is a sense of spiritual awakening, the tendency of material or mundane, the mundane tendencies become diminished. The next step is that when we see everything in relation to Krishna, then it has to be in a mood of service attitude. The first awakening is regulation of a spiritual sense that everything is spiritual, nothing is material. And then when there is a matter to deal with it, there has to be attitude of service to deal with the matter. And thereafter, when there is a dealing with a service attitude, then the next step comes about purification. The aim of life has to be purified gradually and steadily. So the whole material world is nothing but exploitation of material resources. If you see the whole way, the whole life that is going on around us, the industrial life, is going on with this polluted aim of life. Where there is no peaceful coexistence of living species, and therefore there is constant slaughter and murder of innocent living entities, and therefore we find there is constant strife, war, terrorism, violence happening all over the world. And therefore these three steps of awakening, service attitude and purification of the polluted aim of life are the ways to deal with exploitative tendencies on an individual and a collective level. Because individually we may develop that purity, but collectively that has to be expressed through unity. As His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj explains, that collective unity is better than individual purity. So here, this is where the courage comes in the picture, the next step, where the solution has to be applied. And this is very nicely explained as Krishna was dealing with Jarasan in Dwapar Yuga. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with Chand Kazi in Kali Yuga. Similar way, Chand Kazi also represented a kind of an exploitative person who would restrict the following of religious principles by enforcing a legislation by which the devout Hindus could not practice their religion. And then how did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dealt with that? In fact, when Chand Kazi came with some of his followers, when he saw some devotees were doing Harinam Sankirtan with Mridanga and Kartals, he told them to stop and said, since how long you Hindus have started again practicing your religion very rigidly? And Prabhupada mentions that in the purport, it seemed that the Hindus were not following the religion very strictly since long time. they were taking their own religious principles very lightly and casually without discipline. And that was a cause of these Muslim legislators to find the flaw and say that you are anyways not practicing seriously, so why are you doing it now? Stop it now. You're not qualified. You have no qualification and adhikar to practice your religion so freely because you never took it so seriously. Why should you practice it? So therefore, it is said, dharma rakshiti te rakshita. When one follows dharma, that dharma will protect. So, since long time Prabhupada said they were not practicing and therefore we have introduced regulative principles of sadhana bhakti in the Hare Krishna movement. Why? That would mean that we don't just think of Krishna, but we actually do something practical about chanting Hare Krishna, following the four regular principles, serve Krishna in various ways. We don't say, I love Krishna. Oh, I believe in Krishna. And therefore that expression is very important. Because it may not be important for us, maybe. Okay, we may be elevated. As Krishna says to Arjun, everyone has to work, and I am showing by my example, because if I stop doing that, people will make a parampara out of it. And actually this parampara actually had become that the religious principles were taken very lightly, and therefore that sent an indication to other beliefs that they are not very serious to practice their own religion. So why we should not stop them? Anyways, they are not doing it. So exploitation by default arises when there is no sincere application of the principles. There is just superficial understanding of the principles and we do it very ritualistically. And therefore, this is the courage exactly which is required to express our following. And therefore, in this way, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj explains very nicely in his book of leadership. And he explains that there are four levels of a leader. First step is character, to build up a character. That means to be. One has to become spiritually enlightened, one has to become spiritually awakened. And the second step is to be competent. That means to do. Next step is to do something after being something. If you are a devotee, we have to do something to become, to express that devotion. It cannot be just it cannot be a neutral or a latent expression of being. It has to be a very active expression. So after character, there is competence, and next step is courage. And that means, next step is compassion. That means after we become, we do something about it, we purify our hearts, and then we see the anomalies around us. That means to see the miserable condition of material existence. That evokes compassion. And then comes the stage of courage. That means we tell confidently Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, and then we do also have a message along with that. So therefore he explains very nicely, and he said there are various kinds of people in leadership categories, or in a way of kinds of people. There are inventors. There are inventors who make things happen. Right? And there are resenters. There are those who watch things happen and often complain about how they are happening, because they are watching. They have difficulty. Why it's happening like that? And then there are consenters. Those who don't know what is happening but who consent and go with the flow. So there are inventors, there are dissenters, and there are consenters. Then he explains about another thing, that there are those who see the hill as an obstacle and they immediately give up their plans. This hill is difficult to climb. Forget about any venture, adventure into this hill. There are, that means they walk back away from the hill. And there are others, those who see the hill and decide to camp at his base. Very confident. I am going to camp at this base only. I am not going to climb the hill. And there are others, those who see the hill and they proceed to climb the hill. And therefore, the courage begins with conviction. Prabhupada therefore addressed this first assembly of sannyasis, newly initiated sannyasis in Los Angeles And he asks, how many of you are convinced that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? How many are convinced? Prabhupada said, because I am one man convinced, therefore this Hare Krishna movement is being initiated by me. Similarly, if we are not convinced, then probably there will not be any courage to express or to face the challenge. So there was one, Prabhupada was one such courageous person, and because of his courage we are able to receive his compassion. So Prabhupada was once in Calcutta with his disciples on a morning walk, and he saw the Victoria building, and Prabhupada said, when this was being constructed, this was like 20 story high, around 200 feet tall, and Prabhupada said, when I was young there was bamboo scaffolding at the time as it was getting constructed, I would climb this scaffolding up to the high in the building. And then someone told Prabhupada, actually you are so courageous, you are so brave. So yes, Prabhupada said, I am brave, otherwise how it is possible for an old man like me to come to your country alone? For an old person of that age, even if you see the statistics of people going to US at that time, of an old man who was 70 years old, they would have never gone unless they had some complete support, family, safety, security and everything, and then stay comfortably. Prabhupada had no safety, no security, no luxury, no surety, and still he was there. That itself is courageous. To make a visit there without any support is absolutely a matter of courage. And then to express that courage by compassion is something which is the height of conviction, is the supreme conviction. So we will find that unless we imbibe the principles of courage, the problem will be bigger as we perceive it, because we will keep thinking about the problem, and as we think about the problem becomes bigger as we think about it. And therefore Krishna is dealing with Jarasandha in a way that he is going to invoke him to bring more of his armies in such a way that he will vanquish all of them. And then once actually Prabhupada was actually in one of the TV interviews, where one anchor of that TV interview was very very shrewd, sharp and insulting to all the hosts, all the guests. He was a very very insulting host, so no one wanted to go with him, but he was very popular in embarrassing the guests on the show. So then devotees were pleading to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, don't go to that place. Prabhupada said, nevertheless, I don't mind getting embarrassed. As long as I can speak Krishna as much as many times as possible, so that people in this city will hear about Krishna, Krishna, Krishna only. I don't mind what happens to me if I get embarrassed. Sitting in the middle of the Tompkins Square Park and chanting Hare Krishna could be embarrassing to many of us, right? Suddenly in a place you start chanting, and you experience that you are being looked upon all the time. What is this fellow doing? Very strange hairstyle, strange dressing style, strange speaking style, strange singing style. Everything was strange for them. It's like the first alien, like someone came from a UFO landing, and then something like that. So then Prabhupada went to this studio, and this person said, so Swamiji, you are coming from, we have our understanding of God, and I seem that to think that you have come from a place where death rate is very high. That means he was trying to demean the country where Prabhupada was coming from. And he said, what can you teach us? You are coming from a very poor country. So is there something that you can teach us? Prabhupada said, actually death rate is same everywhere, it is 100%. Whether you are US or India, it is 100%. Everyone has to die. So he could not respond. Then he came to the next question. Well, according to cosmology, you say the world is flat. He knew that Prabhupada would say that, no, this is Bhugol, Sapta Jambu Dweep. And so he said, it is flat. He said, once upon a time, there was Copernican theory that the world is flat, and Galileo said the world is his peer. So he said, you are outdated now. Your philosophy is outdated philosophy. There is a new version already which has come, which is more scientific. So Prabhupada said, everywhere where I walk, it is flat. Earth is flat. I don't see spear anywhere. I walk on a flat surface. Do you think it's not flat? So he could not even respond and retort that argument. So he went to the next question. He had a lady assistant. And he was a little stunned. So she came into rescue. And she asked Prabhupada, why do you shave your head? And this was the last straw. And then Prabhupada said the famous, why do you shave your legs? Prabhupada said, better have warm legs and cool brain. And that was, no, that means she also kept shut. Now this person had to save his face with a closing question. Now what to ask more? And he asked Prabhupada, you know, what would happen to the whole world if the world became Krishna conscious? Now he became Krishna conscious by the time. He said, Swamiji is going to take over the world now. So he's going to take over the world. So what will happen for us who are like inimical to these people? What will be our condition? So Prabhupada said, don't worry, there will be always fools like you who will not take to Krishna consciousness. So don't worry, you will be safe. And that's how Prabhupada concluded the interview. And then, you know, it was like, then he took the next 10 minutes and started preaching the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So this is how it happens when you actually take the situation with courage. Then Krishna responds, Krishna reciprocates. And only that, we don't have to react. We have to respond as per Krishna's will. So Prabhupada was also talking about that. You know, this was Prabhupada's great desire that all of his devotees may become very strong, courageous preachers, representatives, where they go and challenge. He told his disciple Hansadutta Prabhu to challenge Kovur in Sri Lanka, and he went told his disciples to defend the brainwashing theory, Rameshwar Prabhu in the court, I think so, one more devotee, Adhikesha Prabhu, and he would always send his disciples, and in fact he said that as much as possible we should try to, because these opposing situations will definitely come, like Chand Kazi's situation. How was the situation dealt with? The impact was shown of unity with a glare of violence. The torches were there. The unity was there. The first civil disobedience movement was there. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had planned to resolve it with logic and reason and argument. But the face was shown as if it was organized revolution. So Mahaprabhu showed the way that such threats to the fabric of dharma or the fabric of the yuga dharma, that is the chanting of the holy names, anything that distorts or destroys that fabric has to be dealt with unity, cooperation and reason, but not violence. Prabhupada said never violence. Violence should be the, if you do it that way, it will spoil a lot of our efforts and endeavor. And therefore this is Prabhupada's explanation about how to deal with situations with courage. And the most thing is competence, because now simply courage is not enough. We'll have to develop the favorable qualities and the attitude to actually make it possible to push the solution through the challenge. And that's by a very sharp intellectual reasoning and strategizing. So here we find that, you know, rabbit, there was a rabbit, Prabhupada told the story of the rabbit, the famous rabbit story, was encountered by the lion, who was, every animal was supposed to go and be a prey for the lion, instead of having all the animals being eaten up at random. So that was a rabbit's turn to encounter the lion that day. And as he came late, the lion asked him, why are you late? He said, there is another of your like you who stopped me on the way. I said, no, I have to go in, I have to go be a prey for this lion, not you. I am his servant, not yours. He said, who is that one who came to challenge you? He said, come, I'll show you. He's in the well. And he showed him in the well. As soon as he saw the clear water and the reflection. And he saw another lion in the reflection. The lions are not like, they don't understand what is reflection. Probably that lion was not an intelligent lion. But that rabbit was intelligent. And he said that, this is the lion. He said, just see, he's challenging you. You do something. So he rode. So he also rode. I said, what is this? This lion is challenging me. And he said, I will jump and kill him. And he jumped in the well and he saved his life. And saved the lives of everyone. The proper reason and argument. So here also, Lord Krishna is very nicely strategizing. Let Jarasandha come again and again, again and again. So first his army is vanquished. So all that burden of removing the army in the battlefield of Kurukshetra will become easier. So practically Krishna strategizes in such a way that the war against the irreligious principles should be fought with strategy and never like emotion or an outburst. So therefore here also Uddhav is also similarly advising how to kill Jarasandha, because when Narad Muni is coming and suggesting that Yudhishthira Maharaj is inviting you for Rajasuya Yajna, and at the same time a letter had come, or the situation was there, many imprisoned kings were actually at the receiving end from Jarasandha, about to be killed. So Uddhav said, better invite Yudhishthira Maharaj, or you go to Yudhishthira Maharaj and tend to perform Rajasuya Yajna so that you can conquer Jarasandha and then perform very successfully. And this is how one has to know how to negotiate, and therefore the competence individually and collectively has to be developed. Like how to develop individual competence by developing a strong sadhana. And like sometimes this nice Bhadi Nanpa was mentioning that a temple president might say to a sadhaka or someone that, you know, very nicely and gently reminding about the commitments to developing competence, spiritual competence. Please Prabhu, could you come on for time for Mangal Arati? Please don't be a member of fan club or garden club or lions club. I mean, very very curtly this temple president had said to his new bhakta. It told him that fan club means don't enter the temple hall while the chamar is being offered to the Lord, or when there is Tulsi Arati going on, the garden club, or not during the Narasimha Arati. Because that is the time when we actually, this is the bout of our courage that we get first in the day. And when we miss that, then we miss that competence. So spiritual competence is developed by a strong discipline, sadhana, conviction will follow later. And therefore, this is many how we can actually, and the next verse which is explaining about a cloud covered, sometimes the cloud covers. Nowadays people are only talking about cloud. There is a cloud on the top there. They are talking about clouds, they are talking about web, they are talking about cloud. They are very expert in actually teaching us how material energy works. And therefore, there is something like eye cloud and there is something like K cloud. Eye cloud is when I see the cloud from my perspective, and K cloud is when we see from Krishna's perspective. When we see the cloud from our perspective, it is like a covering. It is like a dark. It is darkness. It is like gloom. But when you see the cloud from Krishna's perspective, we see the sun. Because sun is above the clouds. Krishna, Surya, Saman, Mahaya in the Kath. So therefore the explanation is here given that when the army was surrounding Krishna, it was covered by whole, like the whole situation of a clouds covering the sun. So Prabhupada explains around 4 or 5 perspectives of this cloud theory. So generally if we have to tell about cloud theory in a college, you can have a cloud theory, which is K cloud theory. So K cloud theory says that there are 2 perspectives, which is my perspective and Krishna's perspective. When we see from my perspective, I see the cloud, I can't see the sun. But when I see from Krishna's perspective, I see cloud as a small insignificant thing. Because the way above the cloud, the cloud may extend thousands of miles, or maybe 7, 8 miles, 10 miles, 15 miles, but the sky is unlimited and the sunshine spreads all across the sky. The vastness and the eternity of the sky versus the insignificance and the temporary nature of cloud. Sky is vast, temporary. Sky is vast and permanent, and the sun is permanent, but the clouds are temporary and they are very insignificant. So one should not worry about the cloud, but yet the cloud is there and we are tiny. So what to do? We should rise above the cloud. Accept everything in Krishna consciousness and dovetail everything with Krishna. That means Prabhupada said when the jet has to fly, the jet flies to the friendly sky. What is the friendly sky? Which is not having many clouds. So avoid the cloud and go by the sunshine. So the friendly sky means always connect with the spiritual energy of Krishna and dovetail all matter with Krishna's energy. Then you can rise above the cloud and take the friendly sky. And therefore Prabhupada mentions that the purpose is not to rise above the cloud, but purpose is not to be above the cloud and be in the impersonal sunshine, but actually reach the Golok planet where you will get a resting place. Otherwise you will have to come down again. So therefore Prabhupada explains that one should rise above by personal service of the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna, the personal service. And therefore Prabhupada said, anyways, how can you go above the clouds? You have to have a machine, like a jet. So this jet is a machine, the human form is a machine, and just like Prabhupada explains about the senses, we have senses, we have mind, we have intelligence. We have to use these material senses, mind and intelligence in trying to connect to the spiritual energy. And this way, one can actually rise above the cloud despite the conditions of great challenges. So today we just saw how there is a challenge, the threat and voids, internal and external, recognizing them, analyzing the problem, devising a solution in form of a courage, and applying that courage in a very competent way by becoming spiritually competent and collectively cooperative. And this way we can come to a concluding completion of the purpose of Krishna's descent in this world and assist in his mission. Therefore the vision is required, the mission is required, and compassion is required. None of them can be standalone or independent or isolated. They have to be interconnected, they have to be integrated. So vision is given by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the Acharya of vision personified, and the Acharya of mission is Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who organized the vision in a very organized institutional way. And thereafter Srila Prabhupada took the vision of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the mission of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and made it so relevant and approachable by his compassion. Therefore the compassion Acharya is Srila Prabhupada. So that's how we are here, and we can further his movement by taking the principles from his books, by his lectures, by his numerous pastimes, teachings and his followers, and therefore make our life go through the challenge with courage, developing competence, and thus making our life successful. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sorry for the very extended talk. Hare Krishna.